and thunderstorms during the afternoon and evening, and a few of those storms may become severe. The front is expected to stall tomorrow along the Kansas City to Indianapolis line. This will result in continued warm weather from Missouri to the Ohio Valley, while to the north it will be much cooler but still somewhat above average for late March. High temperatures today will range from the low 60s over Wisconsin and northern Indiana to the low 80s in central and southern Missouri. Low temperatures tonight will range from the mid-40s in northern Iowa to the low 60s in southern Missouri. The forecast for east central Illinois today, mostly sunny, breezy, and warmer with a high of 72. The wind from the south at 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts to 30. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, the low 57. The wind will be out of the southwest from 15 to 20. Tomorrow, sunny, look for a high of 74 with the wind from the west at 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts to 25 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly clear and colder with a low in the low 40s. The wind out of the north around 10 miles per hour. Thursday, sunny with a high in the low 60s. The wind from the northeast at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Thursday night, partly cloudy with a low in the mid 40s. Friday and Friday night, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. The high Friday in the upper 60s, the low in the low 50s Friday night. At noon central time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from the upper 40s to the upper 60s. There was a mix of clouds and sun. At Rockford, 59 degrees. At O'Hare, 53. In Bloomington, 63. Mattoon checked in with 60 degrees. Carbondale, 68. It was 49 at South Bend, 56 at Lafayette. In Indianapolis, 54. In Terre Haute, 60. Willard Airport reported a sunny sky at the top of the hour, 62 degrees. The dew point, 33. The relative humidity, 33%. The wind out of the south at 16. The barometer, 30.13 and falling. And at 12:39, 62 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. Today, Illinois Public Media begins a series called Neighbors. It's a series about people in Champaign and Vermilion counties and the neighborhoods they call home. In the coming weeks, on Tuesdays, we'll hear stories from people about where they live and why they live there. Visiting people in their homes, people have told us what they value in their neighborhoods and why, as well, there's their concerns about community well-being. Sound and strong neighborhoods are one sign of the overall health and well-being of the larger community. We begin in Danville today, a city of some 32,000 people in Vermilion County.
My name is Mary Ann Pettigrew, and I have lived at this address since 1962 when I bought this house.
The neighborhood is known as Rabbit Town. The name goes back to the 19th century, inspired by the large number of wild rabbits living in the area. Most of the neighborhood's homes, including Mary Ann's, were built prior to the 1920s. Mary Ann grew up in a house her parents, John and Sarah Pettigrew, rented. There were 9 children, 6 girls and 3 boys. Her father worked 3 jobs.
I grew up within about 5 blocks of the present location and went to school at St. Pat's Catholic Church, and was just a few blocks away, and we always walked to school. They were wonderful neighbors, established neighborhood, a close-knit neighborhood. Everybody watched out for the kids. If we did something wrong, we found out that our parents knew it before we got home.
For a number of years, the house she and younger sister Pat Pettigrew call home today housed her parents and some siblings. Mary Ann spent a number of years working as a registered nurse for the Santa Fe Railroad, for an oil company in the Middle East, and St. Francis Hospital in Peoria. She came back to Danville in the early 1970s and has lived in the house on Buchanan Street ever since. She's seen many changes over time, most recently the recession and slump in real estate. They have taken a toll on the neighborhood.
We've had some young people move in, but I think the biggest issue is that some of the homes that have not sold are standing empty, and others that the larger homes that have been turned into apartments. And I think that's one issue that has been a problem with the apartments. So people are there for maybe a few months and they're gone, and then somebody else comes in and they're there for a while and then they're gone too. So there's really no sense of ownership as such. The issues that that concern us as a whole are probably not unique to any city. These times are hard on everybody.
Neighbors, the neighborhood, and Danville have always been important to Mary Ann Pettigrew. She is active in her neighborhood association and encourages young families to join and bring their children when they can. She knows there are many demands on families, but she says being a good neighbor is rewarding.
In my opinion, a good neighbor is one who you know is there for you, they're friendly, that they know that you can help them whenever they need it, and, you know, without being intrusive. We had a neighbor lady. Her name was Margaret. We always called her Bunny. She used to drive a station wagon, and she was great. She taught catechism at school, and she told us after church one day, she said, "Now, when I give up my car," she said, "would you take me to church?" We said, "Sure, Bunny, we'll take you to church." So she finally had to give it up, and she said, "Okay." She said, "I had to take my driver's license 3 times last year." She said, "I'm not even going to try this year." So she was in her 90s then. So,
Mary Ann Pettigrew of Danville, Illinois. Mary Ann's story for Neighbors was produced and reported by Crystal King. For more about the series, visit willconnect.org. It's 12:44. The Pennsylvania capital, Harrisburg, is more than $300 million in debt. The budget is controlled by a state-appointed custodian. City and law enforcement services are under strain, and residents worry violent crime may be growing. Craig Lane of member station WITF takes us to a Harrisburg neighborhood that is considering hiring its own police force.
Skim milk cappuccino?
The Midtown Scholar Bookstore and Coffee Shop, named for the very neighborhood in which it sits, anchors a hip and up-and-coming corner of Harrisburg. At the coffee counter is Sean McLaren, who lives in Midtown. It's easy for him to list the reasons he came here 3 years ago.
I like being able to walk to a lot of great locations. We're right here at the Midtown Scholar. You've got the theater nearby. You've got a lot of great bars and restaurants within walking distance.
But recently he's been more worried about his personal safety.
For the first time since I've lived down here, I heard gunshots fired just outside of my apartment building about 2 weeks ago, so.
A spate of violent crimes has this city of 50,000 on edge, but overtime to pay police to respond just isn't available. So a group of residents is proposing a solution, pay out of pocket for their own protection. They want to create a so-called improvement district for the Midtown neighborhood that would pay up to 8 police officers for overtime patrols at night. It's being touted by the Midtown Scholar's owner, Eric Pappenfuss.
We've had crime affect our staff. We've had crime affect our customers. We have seen a drop off and a decline in the numbers of people that are willing to come after dark and feel safe in the neighborhood.
Pappenfuss says the average Midtown homeowner would pay $5 a month for the officers. Businesses and landlords would pay more. Pennsylvania has 35 improvement districts, but they're all set up in business areas, not residential ones like Midtown. Bill Fontana heads the Pennsylvania Downtown Center, which works with these type of projects. He says competing and contradictory demands on city government are spurring this move. He thinks it could lead to similar proposals across the country.
Nobody wants to pay more taxes, but nobody wants to see services diminished. You can't have it both ways, and I think that's one of the things that are out there that we need to change is that perception that you can have both.
A few blocks away in Harrisburg's downtown, there's a similar approach to dealing with the lack of cash for police overtime. An anonymous business owner has agreed to pay for increased protection on the weekends. And Dauphin County District Attorney Ed Marsico is giving police a one-time grant of $25,000 from his office's budget. He says it's money well spent.
I'm very concerned that the general perception is that there's a lack of resources to fight crime, and I wanted to nip that in the bud. We need more police on the streets.
Back in the Midtown bookstore, Stanley Gruen, who lives nearby, says he has just one worry about the plan to bill property owners for more police.
It'll become known that this area is safe and there's too many cops around. Criminal activity is criminal activity. Where are they going to go?
So you're afraid about maybe driving it to other neighborhoods
in
the city?
Isn't that what happens? That's normally what does happen.
Whatever happens, the proposal's in its infancy. It will eventually be put to a vote. If 40% of neighborhood property owners object, the plan fails, and the search for innovative ways to pay police will only go on. For NPR News, I'm Craig Lane in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Pope Benedict is in Cuba, Latin America's least Catholic country. He arrived Monday in Santiago, where Cuba's revolution began in 1953. He urged Cubans to seek unity and overcome their divisions, but his message was not especially political. NPR's Nick Miroff reports.
Cuban President Raúl Castro greeted Benedict at Santiago's airport yesterday afternoon as the Pope arrived after a three-day visit to Mexico. He continued into the city riding in the Pope-mobile, passing crowds of waving Cubans, and by the evening, the city's Antonio Maceo Plaza was a festive scene with music and building anticipation for what the Pope might say. Cuban state television carried the event live, and speaking from a large blue-and-white platform built for the occasion by the Cuban government, Benedict read in Spanish from a written text. The spiritual purpose of Benedict's visit is the 400-year anniversary of Cuba's patron saint, the Virgin of Charity, and Benedict said he had come as a pilgrim.
Queridas hermanas y hermanos, doy gracias a Dios.
Benedict's homily urged Cubans to seek a spiritual path to resolving their problems. He encouraged a return to traditional marriage and directed his remarks at Cubans both on the island and abroad.
Luchen para construir una sociedad abierta y renovada.
You must struggle to create an open and rejuvenated society, the Pope said, a better society with more dignity that better reflects God's goodwill. At the outset of his Latin America trip, Benedict told reporters that Cuba's Marxist model no longer corresponds to reality, but he did not directly criticize the Castro government at the mass Monday night. Today he travels to Havana, where he is scheduled to meet with Raúl Castro and possibly his brother, though not Cuban dissidents. Benedict may be planning a more politically oriented message for the outdoor mass he will say Wednesday in Havana prior to his return to Rome. For NPR News, I'm Nick Miroff in Havana.
Programs on WILL are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, inviting audiences to enjoy Krannert Uncorked, a weekly free wine tasting almost every Thursday at 5 p.m. in the lobby. More information is available at KrannertCenter.com or 217-333-6280.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 27th of March, 2012. It was on this day, 1851, a group of miners called the Mariposa Battalion entered the Yosemite Valley, hoping to drive out a tribe of Indians so they could do some mining there. They thought they named the valley after the Indian tribe they were trying to drive out, but they got the name wrong. The tribe was called the Awanichi people. Yosemite was the name given them by other tribes as an insult. It meant those who kill. It was on this day, 1915, the woman known as Typhoid Mary was put into quarantine in a cottage in the Bronx. Mary Mallon, she was about 40, working as a cook in New York City, and every household she worked at came down with typhoid fever. Typhoid was common on battlefields. It may have killed more than 200,000 soldiers during the Civil War, but it was rarely seen in the wealthy households where she worked. In 1906, a doctor named George Soper noticed this strange pattern of outbreaks in wealthy homes, interviewed the families, found that they had all hired the same cook, and he finally tracked her down. Mary Mallon did not take it well when he asked her to provide a stool sample. She threatened him with a meat cleaver. He called the police, had her arrested. A stool sample was taken from her by force, and they discovered typhoid bacteria in her gallbladder. She admitted that she never washed her hands when she was cooking. They kept her in quarantine. She was released. She changed her name. She took up cooking again. She spread disease and death in her wake until they finally caught up with her again on Long Island, imprisoned her in the Bronx for the rest of her life, and she died of pneumonia in 1938. It's the birthday of John O'Farrell, born in Oxfordshire, England, 1962. For many years, he was a writer for The Spitting Image, a British satirical puppet TV show, author of a nonfiction book entitled An Utterly Exasperated History of Modern Britain, or 60 Years of Making the Same Stupid Mistakes as always. It's the birthday of the director and screenwriter Quentin Tarantino, born in Knoxville, 1963, raised in Los Angeles near the airport, high school dropout, worked in a big video store, watched movies all day, wrote screenplays. His first movie was Reservoir Dogs, 1992. 2 years later came his big hit, Pulp Fiction. Latest project, Django Unchained, currently in production, a western set in the Deep South. And it's the birthday of Julia Alvarez, born New York City, 1950, grew up in the Dominican Republic, came back to New York when she was 10, author of books about being caught between two cultures. Her novel, How the Garcia Girls Lost Their Accents, came out in 1991. Also wrote a nonfiction book, Once Upon a Quinceañera, about the tradition of throwing elaborate 15th birthday parties for young Latina women. Here's a poem for today by Michael Ryan, entitled Contentment. Fragile, provisional, it comes unbidden as evening. The children